On today's College Football Inquirer, spring practice has begun across the country, including in Tuscaloosa, where they're hoping a rebuilt offensive line will make things happier for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, who, by the way, everybody was worried was going to leave for Michigan less than 2 months ago. Crazy how things change. Plus, the Big Ten begging the NCAA not to enforce tampering rules. Also, Nebraska players challenging the College Sports Commission, as we expected somebody might. Also, Ross Dellinger has his congressional minute. It includes a very fun debate between two senators, one of whom used to be a major college football coach. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. I am Andy Staples here with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. And gentlemen, we have much to discuss. It's been very busy on Capitol Hill with Ross. He's even got a congressional minute later in the show. But spring practice is upon us. There are players on the field. The boys are touching grass. It's one of my favorite sayings.
Gen Z.
Sorry, I don't know why.
It's a Zoomer. It's a hilarious saying. The boys are touching grass. All right. It can mean a lot of things.
But it's interesting because now all of the angst and all of the anticipation starts to ramp up because the season is still a ways away, but we are watching people in uniform, these rosters as they are currently constructed, being parsed out, figuring out who the starting players are going to be, who's going to do what. And Alabama is the one that fascinates me the most about all of these schools because they've got one returning offensive lineman, Michael Carroll. They've got to rebuild the offensive line. They couldn't run the ball at all. But they had this situation where going into the first round of the playoff, they're going to Oklahoma to play in the first round of the playoff. The Michigan job is open. It seems very clear that Michigan is interested in Kalen DeBoer. And the attitude is, please don't take our coach. We like our coach. We're going to keep our coach. They win the game. It becomes probably practically impossible for Michigan to hire Kalen DeBoer, and they end up hiring Kyle Whittingham.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go get blown out 38-3 by Indiana, where Indiana exposes all of the flaws that Alabama had all last season and just laid bare for all to see. And it's like, wait, why didn't you take our coach? And Kalen DeBoer is in the strangest situation. He's won 9 games and 11 games.
Mm-hmm.
He got the playoff win.
Yes.
In his two seasons at Alabama, and yet it doesn't feel like anybody's particularly happy.
No, has a ton of the benchmark bullet points that you're looking for in an Alabama coach. Iron Bowl winner two mm-hmm. times. Yep. Has beaten LSU once, twice, Andy?
Twice,
that's right. All of the things one would assume would have you in good graces in Tuscaloosa, except they have the most disproportionate set of expectations in all of college football because of the previous head coach. Do you guys think that Kalen DeBoer regrets that win over Oklahoma? Think about resetting your clock for a second. Just think about
would he be happier at Michigan right now?
Reset your clock. He's been there 2 years. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's insane.
That's the job. Yeah. Yeah. That's the job.
I don't think so, Godfrey, because I think he did not want to be viewed as someone who ran from that challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I understand that. But I think with Michigan specifically, and maybe even, you know, the job we always hear kicked around when it comes to Kalen DeBoer was that Jin Cohen, who's the AD now at Southern Cal, was the AD who hired him and very much liked him at Washington mm-hmm. when they were together with the Huskies. What if USC were to move on from Lincoln Riley? Those level jobs, he could position the same way like a Dennis Franchione did when he left Alabama in the 90s for, was that, no, it was like the early
Texas
aughts,
A&M.
Actually. Yeah, for Texas A&M.
It was in the 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, early aughts. You know, if he were to go to like a mid-level ACC school, he would be fleeing. But I really think we could all apply logic as a consciousness outside of Alabama fandom and say, hey, the expectations here are so astronomical that you have a 9-game winner who's doing the things he's supposed to, who's taking you to the bracket, to the dance, which is how we're going to measure coaches from now on, and it's still not good enough. So he's going to go somewhere where there's a little bit more sanity.
But here's the thing. You just mentioned USC and moving on from Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
If that were to happen, which, by the way, Lincoln Riley won 9 games last year, the mm-hmm. difference is Kalen DeBoer has already made the bracket at Alabama in 2 years. Lincoln Riley has yet to make the bracket in 4 years at USC. it would require a massive expenditure. The same that would be required if Alabama made a decision on Kalen DeBoer, which if he does what he did last season is not going to happen. They're still going to, like, the administration will still be very happy with him. But it's strange to me, guys, because this time last year, I would not have told you that James Franklin or Brian Kelly were in any danger.
Correct. Yes. And we're good for one of those a year. And we got two, maybe even three last year. So I don't know if DeBoer would qualify for that, though, Andy, because I think this is a one-of-one exception because of the standard that was set by his predecessor, Nick Saban, and because I think Alabama fans, I think their NIL collective, I think the entire apparatus, maybe short of, I wouldn't probably lump Greg Byrne in this, but pretty much everybody
that's
else.
That's our athletic director, yeah.
Yeah, athletic director Greg Byrne's a pretty savvy guy. I think he understands the landscape of college football is so much, so different than the last time Nick Saban was on a sideline. I think this one's hard to judge. We have other names on this list we can get to. I think those are easier to gauge. I think anyone who took this job, by the way, this is not a Kalen DeBoer referendum. If you guys were starting a program with top 15 expectations tomorrow in the Big Two, you'd hire this guy instantly. You'd hire this guy tomorrow. It's just the specific place that he went. It's just that Alabama truly expected to maintain a sort of Final Four level status as we went to a 12-team playoff, and that hasn't happened yet. And probably won't happen consistently.
Right. I don't think it'll happen again, maybe for anybody in this current environment. I mean, everybody's expectations need to be readjusted at every school based on the, like, what we're seeing from, like, the NIL and the rev share and how it has balanced and sort of leveled out the top, you know, mainly the power conference schools. And so I don't know that we'll ever see anything that happened at Alabama the last 15 years at any place, right?
Well, I think Saban saw that. I think Saban knew that was coming. Yeah. He understood the market forces. Yeah. And Trump
said it for him.
Yeah.
At the White House last week.
Yeah. And Saban, you saw it at the end of last season. You saw Alabama being physically dominated in games, in the SEC championship game against Georgia. And in the Rose Bowl against Indiana, they were physically dominated, which is not something you ever saw under Nick Saban.
Well, that's because he had an extreme advantage in personnel that's not possible anymore.
Right. His backups were better than most of the opponent's starters.
Absolutely.
And that
will never
happen anymore.
Yeah. And he was wise to leave. I think we could debate over the course of many shows that I think Saban is in the process of authoring his legacy now. I think he's, because he's been so highly visible in college football with all the different positions that he holds. So anytime there's a congressional anything or a presidential anything, he's there. He's in the catbird seat on ESPN Game Day. He's still very prominent. He was sort of the right-hand man or one of the architects of the LSU coaching search. There was a lot going on with Nick Saban, even though he's retired. So we could debate how he's authoring his legacy and how he'll be remembered. But the one fact I think we would all agree on is that his blueprint is no longer possible. And for all other reasons, that's why he left.
Yeah.
I don't think he loves the state of NIL. I don't think he loves the state of player payment, because it's not that he's angry that kids are getting paid. That might be part of it. But I think it, from a strategist standpoint, it's that he used to exert a level of control that's impossible now. And Saban's entire dynasty and his mythos was built on a level of micromanaging control. How many books, y'all, have our colleagues written about Nick Saban? Like 5, 6, 7. I'm
at
serious.
Least. Yeah, no, at least. And it's all about his management style and everything else.
Yeah.
The thing I think he saw kind of around the corner that a lot of people missed was how Alabama is uniquely situated in this new world where it gives Texas A&M a bigger advantage than Alabama. It gives Texas a bigger advantage than Alabama. Even Tennessee, where they have this state where pretty much, even though Vanderbilt's in the state, the populace of the state, it's almost all orange. So they are going to financially support Tennessee in a way that maybe Alabama cannot be financially supported, even though they've always had everybody kind of pull in the same direction.
And yet, if you look at the 8 schools that have made the Final Four in the 12-team era, where the portal and NIL have been the backbone of success, it's hard to reckon with the results so far. Like, you had a usual suspect in Texas. You had a usual suspect in national champion Ohio State, Penn State, et cetera. And then last year, last year was almost sort of like a giant piece of evidence in favor of an aggressive NIL and portal approach, like Miami, Indiana, Ole Miss, right? So, I hate saying this every week, but like, we don't have enough data yet. We don't have enough data.
No,
so it's not like, I don't think what you're saying, Andy, is that Alabama, it's impossible for Alabama to compete for a national title now. I don't think you're saying that.
I'm saying they have to compete like everybody else does.
Yes. And yeah.
They weren't in that sphere before.
And it's probably impossible.
Talent, like,
yeah, you can't. I will say it is impossible for Alabama to expect to appear in a national championship game one out of every 1.7 seasons, which is what he did at Alabama. I pulled that stat last year on a project.
Every Nick Saban stat is crazier than the next.
Yeah. One out of every 1.7 seasons.
Oh, amazing.
Nick Saban was in it was in a championship game.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Pretty wild.
With DeBoer, obviously he's got to get the offensive line fixed. He hired a new offensive line coach, hired a new tight ends coach. They are working on that. We'll see what they can do. We mentioned Lincoln Riley. He's got this very hard Big Ten schedule. It is why they are not playing against Notre Dame this year. That's why they ducked out of that game. He's in year 5. Does he have to make the playoff this year?
Always said that last year.
Yeah, it's true.
Heritage Hall is mercurial, man. That Heritage Hall is sort of slang for like the overseers, the minders, the boosters, et cetera, at the University of Southern California. They can be fickle. They're like culturally inbred in that, like, making the Lincoln Riley hire was a big deal that they sort of stepped out of the USC lineages and connections. Mm-hmm. I know there are people there who are dissatisfied with the results so far. Andy, the thing I go back to is the loss of DeAngelo Lynn. I think that was a massive sort of piece of the foundation of what he was ramping up to do starting this season that was pulled out unexpectedly. And I know a lot of people have said I'm overreacting to that. I just feel like given the initial defensive performance when he got there and his hesitancy to fire Alex Grinch, losing Lynn when he did, when they were grooming all that talent they had brought in over the course of like 24-25 with 26 sort of being the year they were going to crest. I think we talked about this when we first started the show together.
Yeah.
To me, that's a massive blow because, like, yeah, they're going to be good on offense. We know that.
I think it's more like it's more how it happened and who he left for. So Danton Lynn, defensive coordinator at USC the past 2 years, leaves for Penn State, which feels very parallel.
Yeah. It's his alma mater. Like,
yeah. Yeah. But
I think people in the industry have told me it's his alma mater like 100 times.
Alma mater, and it's true. But you're bringing in the number one recruiting class in the country. You should be, again, this is, if you feel like you're in a place where you're going to go compete for the national title right now, you're probably not leaving, even if it is your alma mater,
for a
parallel move.
That's true. I mean, how many coaches leave a team that they're like, we got a national championship caliber team here? So I don't know what if he felt
Lane Kiffin
that way, if he didn't feel that way. I know that USC, Godfrey mentioned it, the last 2 years and what they're spending. I mean, this past, like the front loading era that happened this past year, I mean, they were, you know, they were right up there with everybody.
They were out
the top
front.
Schools. Yeah. And especially with the 26 and 25, I think recruiting classes, they were just spending just as much as anybody. So when you spend that much, I think that there's obviously an expectation. When they hired him, there was an expectation in winning championships, and that hasn't really happened. And so when you know, four or five years in, when you spin like they have, there's this pretty strong expectation. And I wonder, guys, like, in a lot of times his contract and his buyout is certainly cited. And I do wonder, like, when it becomes bad enough that you just say, we're going to cut this $70-80 million check.
And that's the new question, because I mentioned that with Brian Kelly and James Franklin for a reason. Is that was two schools making the decision that we'd only seen one school make before, and that was Texas A&M, to pay the absolute jumbo buyout. By the way, Kentucky did this too. Kentucky did a jumbo buyout with Mark Stoops.
Yes,
he was nice enough to give him the installment plan, to let him put the buyout on layaway as opposed to paying it all up front. But it's not that's a, I probably should have led with Kentucky did it too. So people understand that this is something I think schools are going to consider. So Lincoln Kentucky. Riley is it, yeah, private school.
I think Kentucky was hoping Mark Pope would help defray some of that attention, and it hasn't really
not happened
yet.
Yeah. So USC is a private school. We don't have Lincoln Riley's exact contract, but I think Ross is right. You're talking about, you know, $70 million.
It would be 70, right? If it was,
yes,
it was this
it's at least 70. I think.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
Mike Norvell at Florida State. We're talking about over 50.
Yeah.
Which
Mike Norvell, Andy, it's over 50 because of Nick Saban. Exactly. Mike Norvell benefited from the Nick Saban retirement maybe more than anyone else.
Yep.
So the Norvell situation, it's obviously more dire than the Lincoln Riley situation. Lincoln Riley won 9 games last year. If they're good this year, he's fine. But Mike Norvell, they could not afford to do it last year. They have spent the last few months grappling with this at Florida State because I've never seen a fan base more down on its program and just sort of checked out. And the leaders of Florida State have had to grapple with this and understand there's never going to be a point where it's affordable. It's always going to be expensive. It's expensive this year. It's expensive next year. It's expensive the year after that.
Right.
If USC goes 7-5, that's the same calculus they're going to have to do.
Yeah.
Arithmetic, but
big difference, right? We're talking about a program that's in limbo because they're trying to comport themselves. And by the way, spoiler, Dabo's on this list too. We'll get to him in a second.
Yes.
Clemson and Florida State, Andy, are comporting themselves like Big Two programs, minus the Big Two television revenue and the Big Two luxuries that are afforded. And they're going to have to reckon with that. A bill will come due eventually. I've made a lot of jokes on this show about Florida State's liquidity issues, Ross. Extremely. Everything's on a credit card.
They built a new football facility and basically a new stadium.
Well, yeah, money's not real.
They'll put you in a hole.
They got the rodeo coming to town this weekend, though.
Yeah, they do.
Are they getting a cut of it? Are you talking about
I believe so.
They got the big cut. Savannah Bananas multiple sellouts.
Yeah, they did. They had multiple sellouts. They made a good bid on that. I've heard.
They might be better off if the Savannah Bananas played the football schedule this year. That's a massive issue. It's funny because I winced a second ago, Ross, when you brought up the Riley neighborhood that we think it is, like 70, even if it's 60, it's still you still wince at that because USC, moneyed institution. It's not Texas A&M, screw it, you know, oil's $100 a barrel, go with God, Jimbo. It's not the same mentality. These are massive pills to swallow. For Florida State, though, I still feel like it's, Andy, it may not be possible to process and then also go out and get an A-list top-tier coach. Although, I'm going to pivot again and say, of all the names that we're talking about, I wanted to push back and say, who are you going to go get, right? Because we're sort of bereft of a tree right now. Florida State, to me, it feels like you go get Kenny Dillingham. He's a former assistant there.
Yeah,
he's red hot.
I think that makes sense. Franklin slow played Virginia Tech because he was waiting to find out.
Because of FSU. Oh, without a doubt.
Was going to fire Norvell last year.
And I think that had that happened, it might have been more, I'm not stumping for Franklin, but financially you would have gotten Franklin on a discount, right?
Yes.
It's like the other team is eating his contract, so to speak.
And that was the discussion. That really was the discussion. But you brought up Dabo, and I want to expand on that because I think you're right. I think we are entering a year where Dabo is very much on the table here. He's got to get better, or Clemson's going to have to do something. And I have thought for a long time that Dabo would be one of those people who says, because he's known for his stubbornness, that he'd be one of those people who says, you got to pay me every cent you owe me if you want me out of here.
Yes.
I don't get the sense it's going to be that way. I Dabo strikes me, and I saw him in person at the coaches convention. I've been, you know, watching everything he said over the last few months. He strikes me as a person who's been looking in the mirror a lot lately.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah,
if
he does that, and he realizes I can't do it anymore, and I understand the firing. Obviously, I'm sure he would make some kind of deal, right? But like, I don't know. I mean, maybe you saw a different person, but I don't see that person.
Yeah, I don't either.
Like, you know, well, I can't do it anymore.
I trust you, Andy.
The quarterback situation where they're
I have not discerned this either.
Yeah. The quarterback situation where they're bringing up the longtime backup, the OC hire where they hired Chad Morris, who was the guy who worked. you know, 14 years ago.
In a different era,
yes. I get it. I'm telling you from Dabo's rhetoric, I think there's been a little,
Andy,
a little more looking in the mirror.
Okay. So let's say humbled by some percentage Dabo goes through this year. It doesn't work out. Clemson is not a playoff contender. And now we're completing what is an obvious decline in the long-term trajectory. They part ways. Are you saying that he hangs it up? Because I'm under the impression from everyone I spoke with that Dabo would be aggressive in pursuing him. Like, you know how Mike Cundy said that when he got fired, but it was like the market was like, no, we're good on Mike Cundy.
I think the market would say that about Dabo too.
You know what's funny? I think there's a faith-based institution in Texas that has a hot seat coach Dabo's Sweeney like
that's
a club.
Baylor. That's fine if he wants to go to Baylor.
But wait, he ain't going to Bama. I mean, that's going to be the caliber of job available to him.
When he was so emphatic and defensive last year, I think he thought that if Kalen DeBoer left for another job, that Bama would call him.
Yes, he's thought that for a long time.
I think he understands that's not happening now.
Greg Byrne ain't doing that, my guy.
No.
I thought he did get a call after Saban left.
He might have gotten a courtesy call, but we know it was DeBoer and Norvell. Those were the two.
Yeah.
I think CAA did everything they could to make sure all of their clients allegedly got a call from Bama.
Well, Dabo's not a CAA.
But Dabo's
anyway.
Not CAA, though.
That's true. Yeah. That is right. Yeah. No, but like I remember there were a lot of guys like in the reporting there where it's like, well, if it hadn't have been Kalen DeBoer and it was like eight other dudes because everybody wanted to get that shine.
And, yeah, I thought and it was
we
even
do
out
not know
and Kiffin. I mean, Kiffin got seated too.
It was not Kiffin.
It was not. It was reported
like
by Chris Lowe.
People would have to die for Alabama to consider Lane Kiffin.
I know, and it was
reported
by Chris
Lowe. Yeah, it was never
going to
happen. Yeah, that was
definitely
never going
to
happen.
But I'm telling you, that's how these cycles work.
Yeah.
I don't think that Bama has ever been serious on Sweeney, ever. I don't think even at the height of beating Alabama that was something. Because if you think about where they were when Dabo kicks their ass in the national title game, you're still prime Saban era. You still think you're in the the conveyor belt of championships is still moving. I think Dabo would have to look at I'm just being honest. Baylor is at the level where that best case scenario would be available to him if they lost four or five games.
I think that is an ego blow to Dabo. Now, I think he'd go do it, which is fine. But
Wait, if a school like Baylor is an ego blow, if he takes offense to that, Andy, then is he just going to quit?
I don't think it would be like the Brian Kelly situation or the Mike Gundy situation.
Well, you just told me he was more humble, but you're telling me he's still better than Baylor?
He's not getting hired at Alabama or anything. If Baylor is probably the level we're talking about, that is a different level.
Yes, he's not going to get hired in the Southeastern Conference. And I would love to see him at a prestigious research institute in the Midwest in the Big Ten. That would be hilarious. That's like a reality TV show. That's like a bad Ted Lasso, okay? So where is he going to go? If not retirement and not like televangelist, and I'm not joking.
He's either the ambassador to Clemson.
Right.
Or
and I don't think he's going
to
do that.
Or he goes to a Baylor type school, or he wins at Clemson and stays. But that is... That doesn't
feel as
likely.
He'd have to win the ACC, right? He would have to win the ACC.
I don't know if you have to win the ACC because if Miami's really good again.
Or sorry, playoff in the ACC.
Yeah, just make the playoff.
Is good. Yeah.
He's going to make the playoff. Get the top 11.
But yes, this is it's a different world.
He's 56, by the way. He's 56.
That's the age Bob Stoops was when he retired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'll give Stoops a lot of credit. He was very prescient about things and there's the history of his father dying on the sideline at the high school game Dabo to me is going
guys,
to feel like go ahead
both those guys 38 when they got the big job
and I don't feel like I don't know if Dabo would read it the right way. I mean, how many times have we seen this like Andy you especially in this industry of guys where your legacy's written, you can go off into the sunset, it's certainly not a financial concern. And yet, you're compelled to do it. That take that one extra job or show them one more time.
They didn't get to this point without being ferociously hyper competitive. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I tell people all the time about the buyout joke. That you like. How many times have you told the buyout joke on the show? It's like, hey, you want to hand me $20 million to work? I'll do it. These guys are so fixated Like, why is James Franklin in Blacksburg right now?
It's It's the reason none of us have ever become major college football coaches. We're not wired that way.
It's because we would. Yeah. It's because we would be like 25 million. Oh, deuces. All right, guys. I'm going to catch y'all.
Yep.
I'd never wake up before 11.
A lot of spring practice left to go. We'll hit some more schools as spring practice goes. But when we come back, there is some big news in the Big Ten on a couple fronts. Ross Dellinger had a story this week about Nebraska players challenging the CSC over NIL deals that were not approved. Plus, the Big Ten commissioner writes a letter to the NCAA president saying, hey, can you please stop enforcing tampering rules? Yeah, that happened. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer. Couple big stories out of the Big Ten. Earlier this week, our own Ross Dellinger wrote about 18 Nebraska players going to arbitration with the CSC. And Ross, would this be the first actual arbitration cases since this whole system started?
Yeah, so there's been, there was 10 others, but all of them were resolved fairly early in the process. So the arbitration process is 45 days long. And at the end of it, there's a ruling. Before there's a ruling, there's a hearing. And so none of them have got to that hearing. And this one hasn't got to a hearing yet, but I expect it will. But yeah, this is the one that's has been the most serious. And just for people listening who are like, what's going on? Arbitration, CSC, what's all this stuff? Like, obviously we know the College Sports Commission has to approve NIL deals. And we've talked about this, how this spring and summer could be sort of a real like revolutionary time for the College Sports Commission on will it exist, will it continue to exist or not, based on its approval of these millions of dollars of NIL deals that have already been promised and some of them paid to athletes, but yet they have to approve this clearinghouse. And so we've talked about how like this is going to be a pretty big spring and summer, and here we are. We have the first challenge of rejected NIL deals. So 18 Nebraska players signed a deal with Playfly, the multimedia rights partner of Nebraska, for combined, all the 18 are well over $1 million in compensation. And the CSC rejected them based on what's called warehousing, which is just Playfly buying the media rights of these players for future use, and the CSC believes,
which is what the collectives did in a lot of their deals.
Yeah, correct. And so it's that's against CSC policy. You have to have timely deliverables, you know, things like autograph sessions and commercial opportunities, and not just future use. So arbitrations, 45 days, like I said, they're probably close to 2 weeks into this, I believe. So we probably have 3 or 4 weeks potentially left until there's a hearing and then a ruling. But for me, boils down to this, Andy, no matter how this goes, it's probably not good for the CSC. Because if the arbitrator rules in favor of the players, it opens up the entire country to do warehousing deals, which
is what they want to do anyway.
Removes
which
the
is
gap
which is happening now
for the most part.
Ross, you one know, of the things that
kind of removes the gap
I was kind of blown away by was that there was this call with reporters where the CEO, Brian Seely, just cops to the fact that this thing was designed to fail. Because he said, quote, I don't think the system was designed with this amount of associated deals in mind.
Right.
Then what, sir, was it designed for? If not this specifically, then what the hell are we all doing here?
Yeah, I'm going to get back to that because his call in the news conference that he held with reporters probably about 6 or 7 hours before I ended up breaking that story was fascinating on a lot of fronts. But let me tell you, like, either way, this is an issue for the CSC. They rule for the players, it opens up warehousing for everybody. If they don't rule for the players, Nebraska's attorney general is going to, citing its state law, is going to sue, and a judge is likely, a local judge, as we've seen with the eligibility cases, is likely to rule for the players in grant an injunction, which potentially stops some of the CSC operations. So either way here, it's not great, which is why the CSC, Andy, was trying to resolve all these cases and has had success doing that before they reach the arbitration stage.
Which we don't exactly know what the resolution is. If the resolution is, hey, just go ahead and do it, then it sort of defeats the purpose too. Yeah. But when this all started, I said this is going to get challenged in one of a few states. The states I guessed were Tennessee, Ohio, Louisiana, or Nebraska. Why?
And why did you guess those specifically?
Because the state attorney general in those states could score massive political brownie points by protecting good old state U. And it's not a case where there's two big ones that they got to work between.
No pro football in Nebraska, right? Everybody's on board with the Huskers. So it's a great rallying point. Back
very
to
little
your question, Godfrey.
Go ahead.
Just the press conference, right, that happened. So on Tuesday, the CSC released a bunch of data, and they do it every 2 or 3 months or so. And what followed was, and we all reporters appreciate the transparency, because Brian Seely was incredibly transparent for 30 minutes, maybe too transparent about the system and how
he's fired.
It's overwhelmed right now.
He's dead. You're transparent when you're dead. Yeah.
And it's, the system is overwhelmed, and it wasn't set up to handle, as Godfrey mentioned, this many manufactured NIL deals is what he called them, which are with associated entities like multimedia rights partners and corporate sponsors and collectives. He said that he was told when he was hired that the belief was there would be that 90% of the NIL deals submitted to the CSC would be real organic deals. Whoever told him that was either high, drunk, or both. Because that made no, you could imagine, if you spent any time in college athletics and any time around the NIL era, you knew that most of the deals submitted were going to be phony, fake, whatever, manufactured
deals in some way. And on three, we split it up into terms. We had real NIL value and roster value, because roster value is what the person's worth as a football player. That's what they're attempting to pay for.
But the latter is the key there. I want to clarify one thing here, because I'm like, it's easy to fall in the trope of just railing against whatever organization is trying to like rein in college football and saying, well, it's impossible. In this case, I really think, and Andy, you kind of set this up months ago, that the CSC was born to die. It was created as a stopgap measure for a temporary, in this transition window for the sport, where it was never going to survive legal challenge. And the first moment that it actually executed its design function, it would then trigger those legal challenges. So a friend of mine, a colleague, David Cavucci at the FOIA Ball newsletter, we don't have access to all of this stuff. But what he did was he pulled 3 years worth of UCLA NIL deals. And what you find in it, and he went over some, it was like hundreds and hundreds of NIL deals. And what you find is a sort of hilarious disparity of valuation. So I want to be clear here. We are in the pay for play era. We are just still coming to terms with that. And so here's what I mean by that. You would have NIL deals for, and by the way, it wasn't listed in the documents, but people think it's the women's gymnast, Jordan Chiles. Mm-hmm. So she has like almost 2 million Instagram followers. So there would be a deal for her for X that the CSC would say, makes sense. This is an endorsement. This person has this following. This is the ROI.
That's very easy math to do. There's a pretty easy mathematical formula. If you have this many social media followers, you command this much. Yeah.
Yeah. As someone who runs a business, I can tell you that there is actual formulas for this, for podcast traffic, for impressions across social. It's fairly consistent too, like based off in the entertainment world, which sports is a part
CPMs,
of.
CPMs, baby.
You damn right. Here's the funny part. You would then see something, no offense to women's gymnastics at all, and I'm being serious here, you would see commiserate deals on the dollar side for a backup defensive back that they're trying to bring in and pay to fortify the football roster. So the CSC executing its function would say, that doesn't make sense. This person has like 2,000 followers on Twitter, where there's notoriously bad CPM. How are you justifying this as a social media deal when actual, and of course we all know it's dressed up payola. Mm-hmm. So Ross, like, I give this guy a little bit of credit of just saying, like, you guys told us to do this. We're doing it. And now we're going to get killed for it.
Yeah. It's sort of like the same position the NCAA has been in a few ways, right? The NCAA is just there to enforce rules made by the conferences in the schools. The CSC is just there to enforce rules made by the conferences in the schools. The conferences created, the power conferences, right? Their general counsels, their commissioners, in the end, NCAA lawyers, they built the CSC.
with Deloitte helping with, you know, the algorithm on fair market value, they built the CSC. And Brian Seely's now saying it was built inadequately, really, is what he's saying.
Well, there was no way to adequately build it because you don't have legal protection.
Because it's kind of a ridiculous premise from the start. Because
it's illegal.
But if I want to pay,
collusion to cap a labor market.
Yes. No. If I want to pay Andy, I'm allowed to pay Andy whatever I want for a job. This is like no-show jobs exist in politics. They exist in all forms of American business. If you want to pay your son to be vice president of your company with no experience whatsoever and start him off at $500,000 a year, you're allowed to do that. And if you want to pay a defensive back with 2,000 Twitter followers the same amount of money that you're paying some actually famous gymnast, you're allowed to do that.
In the United States of America, you are. And that is the problem, is their laws or their rules keep bumping up against the laws of the United States of America, and they keep failing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we'll get to that part of it in the congressional minute, but I want to get to the other piece of Big Ten news that came out last night. So Pete Thamel from ESPN publishes this letter that Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, sent to NCAA President Charlie Baker that basically says, please stop enforcing tampering rules. Because Ross has told us on this show multiple times in the last few weeks, the NCAA is ginning up some tampering cases. Mm-hmm. They certainly have plenty of evidence to go around.
Yep.
And they were going to be punishing some people. Now you have the commissioner of the wealthiest conference in America saying, please don't do that. We need to rewrite the rules. This is just not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a direct result of what we discussed in the past of the NCAA ramping up tampering investigations and potentially even at least suggesting to schools punishments that are quite severe, including game suspensions for head coaches who have been found to have tampered. And there's enough evidence found to have found them guilty. What is most fascinating about this is that the SEC, probably with the option to sign on to this letter, did not sign on. And 2 months ago, almost exactly to the day, we published a story, and I think we talked about it here on the pod quite a bit, where the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, and multiple SEC presidents and administrators went on the record with me railing, ripping the NCAA for not enforcing tampering. I was pulling up a quote from Greg Sankey. This is a direct quote. I'm mystified why there is a lack of clarity over the responsibility for tampering. That is the responsibility for the NCAA to oversee.
He knows to be careful what he wishes for. I read your column on three, Ross, where you talked about the possibility of the SEC going it alone in terms of enforcement. I'm here to tell you. Let me raise my hand. One, the SEC's tried this before. I remember the days when the SEC had its own private detective. They were funny as hell.
Yep.
If the SEC tried to enforce tampering within the SEC, the SEC would break up.
Yeah.
The SEC would no longer exist. So Greg Sankey needs to be very careful what he wishes
for. You guys remember that last scene in Reservoir Dogs? Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
It's funny because we started off this show talking about coaches on the hot seat. Let's go back to Mr. Dabo Swinney for a second.
Oh, one of four coaches who would not, like, if they actually enforced the tampering rules.
Yes.
There would only be four coaches allowed to coach.
Yeah.
Right.
Dabo the first Swinney.
Game. Right. Yeah.
Jeff Munkin from Army, Brian Newberry from Navy, and Troy Calhoun from Air Force.
Yeah. I remember talking to a mid-level Clemson booster just casually during the accusations against Pete Golding and Ole Miss. And he said, like, I'm mad that we lost. Like, I'm mad that we're on the short end of this. I'm angrier that Dabo's out here talking about tampering and not tampering right now.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They're just mad he's not tampering.
Yes. That's the sign of the times. If Petitti and this letter are not another indicator of this, it's like, this is a law. You better be breaking this. It's no different than the free agent tampering in the NFL.
Yeah, in Petit's letter certainly has some good points about how the system can't work in a way without some kind of communication before the portal opens, But the thing is that communication is the way the rules are written against the rules. Yeah, so right. I think, you know what I think? And we're going to get to this, I know, in the next segment, but it applies here. So I want to say it real quick. I was on the Hill Tuesday, spent all day up there, and I popped into a round table where Senator Chris Murphy, the Democrat from Connecticut, was at. And he perfectly, I thought, put how the situation that college athletics is in, and it applies directly to this tampering situation, which is it's a for-profit professional entity at the highest level that's embedded in a nonprofit higher education system. And the two cannot continue to coexist.
Yes. The only thing I would add to that, I think it's perfectly said, is that that has been the case for decades longer than people realize.
A while. Yeah, that's right.
I would
right.
also argue that the nonprofit entity is really a for-profit entity with
you mean on the
relies
education
on
side?
The government being willing to hand out low-interest loans to anybody who will pay the tuition. But
I would completely agree.
That's another argument for another day.
Agree.
Now,
go to trade school, kids.
I wrote a column for On3 that is probably up as you were listening to this pod right now, where I get what Petiti's doing here, but the way I described it is you were essentially trying to remodel the upstairs bathroom on a house that's about to collapse. So
yeah,
you can't really change.
That's expensive to do that.
Yeah.
It's a great idea to rewrite.
You have to tear down the house.
Yes.
Which a lot of administrators, many of them,
but if you don't have rules that govern player movement, it doesn't matter.
But this is Andy. I mean, this is the other level of the game, and this is why I was trying to get with Ross on Tuesday. It wasn't about the politics; it's about the why. Like, why would Trump hold this round table? What is the positioning? Petiti, you asked the same question. I think, like any great mid-level manager, you got to show activity, whether it has any actual return or not. You got to look busy in your cubicle.
And you just compared Tony Petiti to Michael Scott.
can you show me where I'm wrong, sir?
Who's Dwight Schrute then in this scenario?
Oh gosh, we're gonna compare commissioners to office characters.
Well, I know Creed is running the Big 12 right now, so and that is the highest compliment possible, sir.
It certainly is.
No. It is the highest compliment possible, sir.
You know what? He's got to be Jim, right?
The court is an iPad.
Sankey's probably Jim. The guy.
Exactly. Sankey's just looking at the camera, going, "Huh."
I didn't mean to wreck the show this time. That was Andy.
You have to
show some activity. So yes, it's completely nonsensical to even waste time on this. What you should be doing is encouraging for that overall revision. But that gets back to some of the more fundamental issues that nobody really wants to be at the front of in a position of power, except maybe like a Danny White. You know, which is that we've got to break this thing down and reconstruct it and talk about CBAs and talk about antitrust and talk about labor and talk about employment status and talk about health insurance and things that the overwhelming majority of power brokers, and Ross, you tell me if I'm wrong, still don't want to cede and don't want to admit. And so that's why we're in this limbo. It has nothing to do with this poor. I actually kind of feel sorry for these schmucks at the CSC, but I'm sure they're getting paid well.
And they're being honest about it, which I love.
God, very
hey,
honest.
Shout out. Yes. Shout out. Yeah, Ross, you did say that.
The transparency, yes, from Sealy to get everybody. And I think there's some, the transparency is a result of probably partly of the pressure coming from the schools. And not only that now, as we talked about, I think maybe last week, is pressure from the lawyers of the House case, right, mm-hmm. that are now inquiring about why deals are being rejected, like the Nebraska deals. They're now questioning the definition of associated entity, which is why a lot of these deals are being rejected, like the Nebraska deals. And then the delay. Why is there such a delay? And I think Sealy's trying to explain, here's why there's a delay. This system wasn't set up for this. And again, to be clear, the system was set up by the power conferences.
By the people who knew it would be like this. And oh, by the way, you got a too big to fail situation, right?
Yeah.
Because Playfly and Learfield, the MMR companies, we've explained this concept on the show before, but these are companies that schools hire and the MMR company pays you tens of millions of dollars to then manage your mm-hmm. rights, your multimedia yes. rights.
Yeah. Buy your rights and then sell them. Yeah. Resell them.
Yeah. They buy them. They buy them for, so you get a flat fee with a commission on top so you can budget accurately, but they've now used these things as a pass-through to funnel money to the players.
Right.
They can't afford for those companies functions to not be allowed. So
And Seeley said on the during the interview, again, another bit of transparency, he said that now apparel deals have been apparel deals that have a contract with the school have been officially and formally deemed associated entities. So that'll cause more review, longer reviews and rejections potentially.
I'm just waiting for the first British night school.
I know we have a lot of like DC listeners, and I'm curious if there's like anyone from political science out there. This reminds me so much of in foreign nations that are notoriously sort of institutionally corrupt. The CSC's placement and structure kind of reminds me of something that was designed to be overwhelmed and subverted. I'm curious if anyone out there can like it's like a foreign government where you know you can buy off an official.
I love how Godfrey has now gone to college sports is being set up by a CIA agent in a banana republic.
I'm defaulting to that knee jerk. How is this like FIFA reflex? You know how does this one emulate? How does this week's episode emulate soccer?
This is your CIA agent propping up some sort of weird government structure in Central America to make sure that
because like
the puppet they want stays in power.
The Seeley quote of like, we didn't expect to be overwhelmed with this amount of crap. What? How?
You didn't?
What? Well, not only that, he was also told, I think when he was hired by people, he was told a participation agreement, which binds everybody, will be signed. Everybody's on board to sign this thing. And here we are 8 months later, and nobody
signed. I kind of feel for this guy.
Texas Attorney General, by the way, was like, don't sign that!
I kind of feel bad for this guy. I want to have him on the show.
Gentlemen, we've talked around D.C. Now we're gonna go to D.C. Our man Ross is there. Our man Ross is on Capitol Hill. So we have Ross Dellinger's Congressional Minute when we return. We are back at the College Football Inquirer. Our man Ross Dellinger is in the District of Columbia. He was on Capitol Hill on Tuesday, which means it is time for Ross's Congressional Minute. Ross, I have the timer right here.
Deep breath.
Are you ready?
We good? Good cardio?
A week after the presidential roundtable at the White House, the wheels of Congress are creaking at life ever so slowly. In the House, Republicans believe the SCORE Act has the votes to pass this time, third time's a charm, and could be on the agenda next week, though it's probably safer to probably say by the end of the month that the SCORE Act might come up. However, some Democrats, shockingly, believe that the Republicans don't have the votes. Republicans can only afford to lose one vote to hold the majority. Meanwhile, in the Senate, Maria Cantwell and Ted Cruz were scheduled to meet on Wednesday to discuss college sports, a rare meeting on the issue between two senators, one Democrat and one Republican, who hold most of the authority over a college sports bill passing the chamber. Can they come to a compromise? We'll see. Several key issues stand in the way, including employment, Sports Broadcasting Act, and the NCAA antitrust and governance oversight. Now, finally, in the White House, Trump staff and members of the presidential roundtable are hard at work on, yes, an executive order, Godfrey. One is expected to coming in the coming days, and the concepts are likely to run parallel with Trump's talking points from the roundtable event, which, if you recall, was about taking college sports back to the pre-NIL days.
I mean, that's like 103. That was really good.
Yeah, that was tight. That was good. Yeah, you had a lot. We kind of jammed a lot into Ross's Congressional Minute.
That's it. There you go. It's a lot.
He didn't even have the funniest part. You know? The Chris Murphy, Tommy Tuberville exchange.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. I thought we were going to talk about that.
Ross, please.
Yeah. Yeah, so I walked. This was a roundtable held by Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy in the health, labor, pension, and something else committee in the Senate. And it's a committee that, if there's any employment as part of any bill, it will go to this committee as well. They have jurisdiction. So he was holding a separate hearing on college sports. And lo and behold, I walk in, and there is Tommy Tuberville sitting next to Chris Murphy. These two could not be more dissimilar on their political beliefs.
Yeah.
Tommy Tuberville is all the way right. Chris Murphy is all the way left, right? Tommy Tuberville wants a completely restricted, mostly restricted market. And Chris Murphy wants collective bargaining and employment. So here they are sitting next to each other. And it was a fascinating for them to go back and forth. They exchanged words a little bit, playfully for the most part, but clearly don't agree with one another. But I think the whole thing for me just painted this picture of the vast differences on the employment, college athlete employment issue between the Democrats and Republicans, especially those on completely different sides of the aisle. So it's a huge sort of divisive issue, and maybe the most divisive issue of any college sports bill is this employment.
It seemed like Tuberville got a little bit stopped in his tracks when Murphy mentioned that coaches make a lot of money and no one seems to be restricting their income.
Yeah, that was a funny exchange where Tuberville actually acknowledged that coaches are paid too much money while saying I was paid a lot of money too, but not the amount of money that they're making.
So I have a quote,
you know.
I have a quote and it was from you that the Yahoo team transcribed for social. This is from U.S. Senator, former Auburn and sort of Cincinnati head coach, Tommy
Tuberville. Texas Tech?
Sure. He left the lunch. I was making money. Not as much as they are making now. Why do they make that much money? It's ridiculous to be paying $9-10 million to coaches when a lot of that money can go to players. I would like to point something out. Andy will probably catch this. The invention, more or less, of the modern coaching buyout, which has exceeded $1 billion in dead money, has a lot to do with one Tommy Tuberville and the famous JetGate incident, which we can't describe in a short amount of time. But I laughed, Ross, when I saw your coverage, because of all the people to complain about too much money being spent on a coach. He used that number, what did he say, $9-10 million. Do you guys remember how much he got paid when he got fired from Auburn in 2008 to not coach? At the time, it was a gobsmacking $5.1 million.
It was considered a lot at the time.
It was considered a ridiculous amount at the time.
Yeah.
Of all the people to chastise coaches for making too much money, which I sort of agree with. But I am also like, hey, let the free market operate.
By the way,
everybody.
Matt Patricia, the Ohio State defensive coordinator, will make $3.75 million this year.
An assistant, which is almost close to that buyout. Tommy Tuberville is completely full of it. And I think Murphy kind of caught him at a little bit of a pincer in that moment, and he didn't know how to respond. Tommy Tuberville profited off of dead money, being paid not to work, and big, fat, dumb contracts everywhere he went. And he helped invent the modern coaching buyout. I just wanted to add that on.
It's a trailblazer, Godfrey.
That's right. He's an innovator in the space of being paid not to work. And it's funny, nothing more American than that.
When Tuberville and Murphy going back and forth, and I was sort of posting some of the quotes, I got more than two or three people ping me and actually said at least a few things that each one of them said is right.
Right.
And then somebody said, and that tells you how effed up the industry is, that a little bit of what a far right leaning politician and far left leaning politician, that a few of their points are good.
But it also tells you, like most totally things, different. The solution is in the middle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if
yes.
these people would just talk to each other and hammer it out, they can reach something. Like, again, I don't think there has to be employment. SAG exists. The Writers Guild of America exists.
Right. Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of bargaining, though.
Yeah. But, right. You can have bargaining without
bargaining.
Full-time employees.
I'm fine with that. You don't necessarily have to be a salaried employee by the definition of the law, depending on state. It's funny because Murphy and Tuberville inadvertently kind of pulling together a salient, sane argument. It's the same thing as go back and read the Alston opinions. And go back and look at these judges who are so diametrically opposed on so many different points of legal principle. And everybody got a dunk in on that one. It was they didn't have a dissenting opinion. It was a majority rule. It was basically a collection of opinions from Supreme Court judges who couldn't agree if the sky was blue on that the NCAA is full of it. It was amazing.
The quote-unquote dissenting opinion was Brett Kavanaugh going, I want to agree more.
Oh yeah, it was the fourth rapper on the diss track. He's like, I got a couple. Let me jump in on these bars real quick.
Yeah,
everybody. Thought
one
this
thing Murphy
was bad.
Did say that surprised me. He sort of like when kind of questioned, he sort of backed off the employment and made the point that Andy just made of, well, there needs to be some kind of players association in bargaining. He seemed to sort of hint toward
right.
The, that,
there,
which
there is
was
a compromise that can be had provided they they give the players a seat at the table in rulemaking. It doesn't have to be the players or employees.
No, but you do have to have something to, akin. You mentioned SAG. I'm in the Writers Guild. Like, there has to be something where I'm in the Writers Guild, and so if I write a fiction screenplay and it's optioned, there are negotiated floors and ceilings based on the option for a piece of writing. It's the, and like there are, I would be eligible for insurance for X amount of years, months, like the basic stuff. I'm not asking for you to take on 200 football players as salaried employees necessarily, but right now we're at zero, we're at nothing. Yeah.
But that helps you, like, if you can do that, if you can figure out the compromise that works for that, then you can start compromising on some rules that the players also agree to, where you would have rules for compensation, you'd have rules for player movement, and then you could work on the tampering rules, Tony Petitti.
Yeah. And by the way, in this universe, since Andy, we're hammering this out right now, we're fixing it. Let Texas Tech spend as much as they want forever. I'm totally fine with it. Like we're not going to cap anybody either. Like, you guys want to spend a $1 billion on a roster, we're going to let you. Absolutely. We're not saying that there has to be limits or anything like that on the other side of it. Let's just add reasonable structure to this process.
Yeah. You know, to tie this all back together to Congress, during the roundtable, Tuberville called for Donald Trump's executive order to, number one, reinstitute the NCAA's one-time transfer policy, limiting transfers to one before you have to sit out. And number two, create the 5-for-5 eligibility standard. after that, Chris Murphy questioned Tuberville on limiting transfers. And Murphy said, coaches too? And Tuberville
that was a good one.
You got me there, Murphy. And then Murphy got up and walked out of the room.
He dropped the mic?
High note, like Costanza. Yes, he left it. Yeah,
I would love if the executive order commands 5 to play 5, and they actually do that.
I wonder the
class action lawsuit that would. The reason they haven't, because it is a logical, sensible thing to do.
It is.
The reason they haven't done it is because they know a class action lawsuit will be filed 1 minute later.
Yeah. Not only that, but it would impact all the lawsuits they currently have open that they're fighting, all the eligibility lawsuits. So that's
6-for-5, by the way. 6-for-5. Yeah. Some people take six years to get out of college, okay?
Yeah. They're called doctors.
No, they're not. They're called.
They're called lawyers.
Phantom Island Dust Show. That's what they're called. Right? They're just making their way. Okay.
Listen,
Andy,
you don't have to wait 6 years for the next episode of the College Football Inquirer. We will be back on Tuesday. I'm sure there's going to be more tomfoolery on the Hill, but also, look, spring practice is going on. We got to hit some of these camps.
Tackle football. We're talking about the tackle football, the passing, and the
they
catching.
Are in, the
and
pads the are popping, as it were. We'll talk to you Tuesday.